Hey guys, how are you? You can hear me? I hope.
Yes. Vipin,
yeah,
I can take minutes, Vipin.
Oh, thank you. Because it's always a juggling act. Otherwise. Thank you, Kelly. So I'm glad that Ajay is here too, because we had a conversation about consent the other day, and I would like to try to bring all those threads together. But before we go there, we have to talk about the how we are going to proceed with today's meeting. Of course, it means that we are going to have to do the, hold on a second, the antitrust policy. So you can see this, right? You can see the antitrust policy notice. Everybody should be aware of this. And if you do not agree to this, please do not continue with the meeting. The other one is be nice. Basically, everyone is welcome. Be honest, but not brutal. Let me put it that way. Always. You have a better way to communicate if you are respectful and clear instead of trashing people. So, and of course, this also means that we try to obey all the rules put forth in the Hypology Charter. So without further ado, I think we should go to the implementers working group call. If somebody was at the last meeting, please give an update on that. But actually, before that, let's have introductions, because there are several people here who are let me put it this way, who have come back to the fold after a while, so it's always good to know what people are up to. Can you hear me? Or did I close the meeting?
You're good, Pippin.
All right, so let's go down the list here. Let's see. Sumit Kumar.
Hey, Vipin, I just joined.
Yeah, would you like to, one, say who you are, two, why you're attending, and what you can contribute, and what is your expertise? Less than 20 yeah. seconds. If you don't want to say anything, that's great too. But let's start with you, Sumit.
Sure, very quickly. Sumit Kumar from Capgemini, based out of US, North Carolina. Have been in blockchain space, bit on and off. Have been following this particular group. I try keep joining this as much as I can. And looking forward to contribute on any of the topics I can in the blockchain space over here.
All right, Ajay.
Hi, everyone. This is Ajay here from IronWorks, Pune. We're based in Pune in India. We have been working in the blockchain space from around 3 to 4 years, specifically on the identity space from last 10 months around. Built some identity solutions using Indy for our customers.
Kalia, what a pleasure to see you here.
Hi.
So am I supposed to introduce myself?
Yes.
My name is Kalia Young. My handle is Identity Woman. I run the Internet Identity Workshop. I do consulting with companies who are trying to understand the space, and I'm a keen advocate for open standards and have a book coming out. The Domains of Identity got picked up as a real book, so that's going to come out in the new year. And yeah, happy to be here.
And we on a couple of comments here. One is Domains of Identity have been used extensively in our document. Second, Kalia has contributed very, let's say, incisive comments on the paper, especially around the storage of PII on the ledger and on Aadhaar, since she's also written a paper on Aadhaar, which I have to mention here. So going down the list, it's Kelly.
Hi, Vipin. I'm taking notes at the same time, if I could pass.
Sure. Kelly's been very active in taking notes and also on, you know, she's an expert in education and dissemination of information. And I'm very grateful that she's here to take notes. Marvin Bestecker.
Marvin from Germany. I'm new to the topic and I'm working in the SSI area, and I'm interested in the goals and plans of the identity working group, so that's why I'm here.
Okay. Nathan, are you there? If you don't want to speak, it's okay too.
No, sorry. I just changed to mute. So, hi, this is Nathan. I work with Jio and had been working with UIDI. I've been part of Aadhaar ecosystem in India, and I'm an identity person and just trying to see how the whole blockchain can fit into identity space, specifically after having experience in Aadhaar. And there are, of course, certain criticisms around privacy and how we can address those status.
Shantanu.
Hi, everybody. This is Shantanu, and from Mindtree, working on this blockchain for last 2.5 years, and very much specifically interested on this identity thing, and I'm following up. For last 1.5 months, I was not able to attend. But yeah, I'm back again.
Todd.
Hi, I'm Todd Gerke. I'm with Luxoft, and we develop solutions using SSI and blockchain.
Great. Now, I know that we had several things here. One is the Identity Working Group implemented call that I think Kelly had attended. So I'm not sure of exactly what went on there, and they were, you know, they're not here to talk about this. So if
I would just say that this is a very good call and worthwhile, because each of the different groups or SIGs related to identity kind of report out. It's almost like a mini identity TSC. Kalia, you were there as well, right?
Yeah. It's a good call.
Yeah, because it encompasses a lot of the SSI you know, practitioners, people who are out there, and that's very good. We also presented the identity working group paper, I think Kelly did, on the call. And we have decided to move it to GitHub for more control, basically because there were a lot of rogue edits on the paper. We had locked it down, and which is a very bad thing. My appeal to you is, you know, if you're contributing on the paper, is instead of saying this, you know, this doesn't look good, please say something like, this could be possibly changed to this text, because then we have something concrete that we can add or discuss. You know, so the GitHub repo was created. So if you know, I wanted to throw it open to you guys that, you know, some of you should become maintainers, and anybody who wants to become a maintainer should reach out to me, and I'll tell you exactly how to get onto that, onto the GitHub repo to be a maintainer. And even if you are not a maintainer, obviously you can make changes and post a PR if you have a GitHub user ID. Many people may not have it, so that, you know, that poses a problem, which is basically you can then send, you know, the comments to the maintainers who are public. One will be, you know, Kelly is already asked to be a maintainer, which I'm going to get to in a minute. We have some things on the paper that are slightly, you know, that are not resolved. Some of that material was there from before, so we have to make a conscious effort to update the paper to the latest. I'm grateful for Brent Zundel's suggestions on the paper. Two areas in particular seem to be slightly controversial. One is the whole idea of PII on the blockchain, which of course has been deprecated in the last few years. But then there is the tension between the actual people who have actual solutions and the people who are coming up with new solutions, which may not be in production yet. So I think one of the aspects that we have to debate is, if there are ideas like Aadhaar, which are you know, basically been rolled out and affect 1 billion people, so it's a production system. Now, there are many, many problems with it, people have noted, but there are also many advantages to having Aadhaar compared to what was there before. So it is this tension that has to be resolved. That means, like, if somebody has designed a system that is that's bad, how do we roll it back? How do we roll back those bad effects? By making changes to the production systems, either because of laws, like Nitin has noted, Aadhaar has Supreme Court has opined that privacy is a basic right. So how do you then put that stuff, you know, how do you stuff the genie back in the bottle? How do you make irreversible reversible? These are questions that we should be looking at, because, like it or not, we have many, many systems that handle identity. And how do we progressively go towards a better system? Not just in blockchain, in the blockchain world, but elsewhere. So anybody has any opinions on this, I would be glad to hear it. You know, making the you know, if you're doing greenfield development, it's one thing, but Kalia, you probably have something to say about this.
Sure. So I think that, here's the thing. I think that we need to separate out some concerns. One is that it's widely accepted practice for local authorities to issue birth certificates to parents of children when they're born, and that that ends up being the basis for other documents that states issue to their citizens that we commonly call identity cards, including passports, right? And what India built was a large-scale national system for issuing identities to citizens. Like every, you know, lots of countries have such systems. The issue with Aadhaar and with the Singapore system also mentioned is that the state also provides ongoing authentication services, which means it sees everywhere a person uses their identity. And that's not the case for all the systems that Western liberal democracies have built. And in fact, when those countries move towards building systems with sort of phone home architectures, their citizenry freaks out and kills those programs, right? And so part of this is separating out, yes, there is a role for states to issue identity cards to people and be authoritative sources of information like when they were born and their citizenship status, etc. Does that mean that the state should be the identity provider in the same way that Google and Facebook on the web are identity providers? And the perspective that the community that developed SSI has originated from with the Internet Identity Workshop starting 15 years ago was that there should not be large-scale identity providers of either the commercial type or the government type in the digital world, and that people should be empowered to assert attributes about themselves, potentially from authoritative sources, without those sources knowing where they're coming from, right? And it's this separation of concerns that needs to be, that SSI is coming from, not that all states should not issue documents to their citizens. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. I mean, you know, if I show my driver's license to somebody, obviously, the DMV is not notified. I mean, we are talking about regular paper stuff, or even if I use my passport. But what you said just now is kind of interesting, because the lack of large-scale identity providers has caused people like Google and Facebook to step into the breach. And even in this so-called liberal democracy, where government is not tasked with that function, the commercial interests have stepped in and done that, and that has caused tremendous problems, as we know. And so, you know, yeah, I believe that SSI is the answer to that, because obviously when you're presenting your credential, you don't have to notify the issuer of that presentation. I mean, this is the key point. So in Aadhaar, I'm not an expert on Aadhaar. There is Nitin is here, so he can, or even Ajay, I think he knows a lot about Aadhaar. Those guys can talk about this particular aspect. Let's focus on that particular aspect, which is the issuer knows your presentation. And thus, the Supreme Court ruling that came out in 2018 protect this, or does it allow the government to still play that role?
I think in a sense, Kalia, you are actually, I mean, pointing to the right direction, but India being quite complex in this whole, I mean, you cannot compare a Western country to India, and we had our different problems, which Aadhaar addresses. And in fact, one of the major use case which Supreme Court upheld is the government benefits. And like, for example, I'll take an example. There is a wide scale PDS system, public distribution system, which actually gives food grains to a lower income group or below poverty line people. And one of the biggest sufferings is due to lack of identity to the people living below poverty line. And when they move, mainly like urban laborers or laborers or urban poor. Now, once they move from their villages to the cities, I mean, they don't have those benefits because those benefits tied to certain
personal layers. Nitin, nobody is questioning the usefulness of Aadhaar, I don't think. Yeah. I don't think Kalia is questioning that.
I did spend 7 weeks in India earlier this year on the ground to understand Aadhaar better. And I actually came away with very mixed feelings in the sense that I think that it is a good system for where India is at in its stage of development. And 10 years ago, the design choices that were made were good for the time. I also think that if the centralization model continues into the future, it doesn't align necessarily with what I understand to be the values of the world's largest democracy, right? And that's where it's more like, where does this go? It's not about critiquing the past.
I totally agree, Kalia. I totally agree. And somewhere it has to go towards a decentralization, but the identity has to be derived from Aadhaar. I mean, somehow those decentralized identity has to be derived anonymously from Aadhaar, and then you can use that identity further to actually validate, authenticate, authorize. I totally agree. That is the model that has to evolve. And for that model to evolve, I think somewhere we have to come out of that government control. Right now, it is tightly controlled. And I think Supreme Court order is mixed there, though it has upheld Aadhaar in terms of usage with regards to public benefits. But again, it has restricted private entities. So the evolution of decentralization has been restricted. So that is the whole model which has to change.
No, but what I am contending is that it is not roses here in the US either, because the big companies like Google and Facebook have tremendous centralization of the issuance architecture. I know that OpenID Connect and stuff like that probably tries to mask that, right? I mean, by giving some kind of
token. Ironically, OpenID Connect enabled all of it, which wasn't our intention. So I think a frame may be to talk about the centralized systems and to talk about both, to not frame it as like to say there's an issue with centralized identity provider models, state issued ones and commercial sector ones. And this is what's happening in the world today. And it's not necessarily great. Either one isn't great. And I don't want to have a debate about better or worse. It doesn't really matter. They're not good for people. And there's limited choice in who I trust to support managing my identity.
So we are all violently agreeing here. The question is, how do we get to where we want to get to from here? That is a practical question.
In the paper.
No.
I think Vipin. I think earlier you mentioned the point, and even Kalia mentioned the point about whether Aadhaar or similar system, especially Aadhaar, whether it tracks the verification of the identity. So if the verifier, if a citizen goes to a relying party, whether those proofs which are presented are those tracked or not in the current Aadhaar system. As far as I know it does. So I can
Ajay, let me correct. So it never tracks what for you have authenticated. So the only UIDI has a log of that there is an authentication that has happened.
Exactly.
Use case is not tracked. I mean, why you authenticated, right. Where you authenticated, and all those things.
Right.
Just
right.
Authentication, so, but still there is a centralized audit.
The location, each terminal that authentication happens at has an identifier, and it's possible to figure out where people are authenticating.
That information is specifically with the AUAs and not tracked at the Aadhaar UIDI level.
Sure.
Earlier there was a lat long panel. Lat long coordinates, but they have now nobody sends that. That was muted. So they have restricted what they track. But yes, there is a possibility that you can actually through analysis you can actually find out what has happened.
Okay, and then there was another point that I wanted to mention about. How do we, Nitin, you also mentioned about this, how do we create Aadhaar derived ID? So we were running out through POCs on mobile device that using the offline Aadhaar XML, which is available to every citizen through their website, we were, able to get that XML, extract the data, signatures, and, all authentic data of my own valid XML, and out of that create credentials in my NDBS or Aries wallet, whatever it is, which is a self-attested credential, but based on the Aadhaar-based OTP authentication. So I can always prove that, the credential that I have in my mobile is created out of the offline XML generated by Aadhaar and given to me. So that was a POC we did a couple of weeks back. So from once we have this Aadhaar based derived credential in my wallet, I can always create proofs out of it, and I can prove digital cryptographically. I can prove to the relying party that this is my Aadhaar based identity. These credentials are generated out of the offline XML.
So I'm still struggling with Kalia, if you can actually guide me a bit and Vipin. If we create this anonymous identity based out of, derived from, say, Aadhaar, now the anonymization, at a point of service when we actually opt for a service, now I cannot present myself as me. It would be anonymized identity.
Nobody talked about anonymous anything. I think that there's a bunch of things potentially being confused. One of the self-sovereign identity ecosystems has proposed the capacity, if one chooses, to have derived credential, sub attributes, like I'm over 18 or I'm a resident of District X or whatever. The ZKP work going on in the sovereign / Hyperledger Aries ecosystem. Other folks are just talking about government issued verifiable credentials. And it's all to be determined. So, I mean, if we want to have a conversation about the path from, I think if I was to wave my magic wand and say, how can we get from where we are now to a future that's kind of cool, I would actually think that states that currently issue credentials in the way they do now shift to issuing verifiable credentials into people's digital wallets, and then people use those digital credentials issued to them officially by the state into their digital wallets for whatever they want.
Like a driver's license today, for example.
Okay.
But in a decentralized, you have to be careful when you say that, Vipin, because in India you can get a digital driver's license.
No. Forget about
data lockers, right? So
yeah, I'm talking about the paper. The one that I carry around in my wallet, physical wallet. We yes. want to reach that state where the proof is in the actual piece of paper that I'm presenting, because it's holographically generated, blah, 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 whatever. So there has to be some equivalent method to generate a digital proof. And that cannot be faked. And that's the key. Once you have that, then you present it to a merchant when you use your credit card or whatever, and they trust that what you're presenting is the real proof. They don't have to phone home, like Kalia said. There is only some small problems there. One is the revocation business, because that is still a slight conundrum in SSI even. And revocation meaning, like, suppose your DMV has actually revoked your driver's license, but so when you're getting pulled over by a cop, they do phone home, they do see whether your driver's license is valid or not. But if you go to a merchant, they probably don't. So there are different levels of reliance on this system, right? And how can we have similar levels, at least something similar in a digital context?
So I think India already has, as Kalia mentioned, there is something called a digital locker, where it's a phone app or of course a web app. So you can download that on phone, and you can have the driver's license on that app, and say, are pulled over, you can show that digital proof, and that is digitally signed by the transport department, and that's linked to your Aadhaar. So it is actually technically derived from Aadhaar. It's one sort of identity which is digitally signed, and that kind of digital identities you can gather on your phone, on your apps. In that terms, India is moving towards that. But I don't know how it is going to impact the centralization or decentralization per se. But yes, that's what right now we have. So,
yeah. What I'm contending is that, we do have some form of decentralization driver's license.
It's not decentralized, Vipin. There is one DigiLocker provider.
I'm coming back to this.
Concept. Just to be clear,
I'm very clear about it. But if you go to a passport, for example, there is a centralized authority in the U.S. who issues passports. So it's centralized. So this whole thing about decentralization, centralization.
Decentralization is not, so the thing is, maybe this is where language gets in the way of talking about this stuff. I think that the term decentralized identity, the term means more that And the verifiable credentials is an open standard where any institution can issue any credential it wants to any person it wants. It's a language for credential issuance. And once those credentials are issued to people into their digital wallets that they control, there's a whole ecosystem effect that's possible that you don't get from one centralized identity provider, whether it's a commercial one or a government one.
So,
Kalia, you said that anybody can issue, any entity can issue a credential. So this credential would be derived from the base credential of, say, Aadhaar, like they actually authenticate, they validate through Aadhaar, and then they issue
Right, but the verifiable and verifiable credential means it's cryptographically signed. It doesn't mean it comes from any authoritative source. So Aadhaar could be an issue of verifiable credentials, a data format, that's what a verifiable credential is, into Indian residents' digital wallets. And their educational institution where they got their degree could also issue verifiable credentials, which is a data format that assert their degree and what they earned into their digital wallet. And the local salad shop that wants to reward loyalty can issue a verifiable credential every time somebody buys a salad, right? Like, it doesn't matter. It's a very broad data format that can apply to a vast range of use cases. And that's what it, that's the way to think about it that helps get out of like everything, like some of those use cases, like your educational institution will probably want you to present your official government card to them when you enroll. And then they'll put your name on your license, but the salad shop won't care, right? Like,
exactly. So
does that help clarify like how, what a verifiable credential means or is?
Yeah, it definitely does. Go ahead, Nitin.
Yeah, I agree. So you mean to say that there has to be a standardized format, and so everyone who is issuing a credential uses that standard format?
Is a standard format. It's at the W3C, and it just completed development. And it's the format that is being used across the ecosystem of people developing decentralized identity.
So I can say I will issue a credential for, you know, for buying chai in my shop. It is a totally non-standard thing, but I follow the both the language and the, you know, the format and everything that that the credential the W3C credentials group proposes. So then a program that reads that will be able to make sense of that to a certain extent, and then, you know, that's that. My conundrum is, you know, okay, so we have all these systems right now. How do we propose a way to transition to this new way of doing things? Because the new way of doing things, although sounds great, there is no production system really that does it today, at least at scale. Not that I am aware of. Kalia, are you aware of any?
So we're just on the cusp of like emergence, right? So this year is going to be a really big year for actual production deployments. And there's been a bunch of large scale pilots. I just got sent a bunch of reports and white papers about them. And I got the information yesterday. I'm happy to post it in the list. But I don't think it's fair to, like, given the code bases and the standards and stuff, it's not about whether it, like, no, we can't point to a large scale production system for regular citizens, but British Columbia is already issuing verifiable credentials to its businesses, right? And that's the first sort of, they've issued 1.2 million credentials using these technologies.
Yes. So John Jordan did come and present that idea here. He spoke about it briefly, couple of months ago, I think 2 or 3 months ago. I have to look at that, but it's true. There is a difference between 1.5 million and 1 billion. So that is a different, so you have a running system. How do we change it? This is the question, right?
The main problem, it is not for the 1 billion or, whether it is 1 million. The problem is being literate of the data value. So I'm sure, Kalia, your experience with the people literacy. So when Nitin and Ajay was trying to, inform you, in the discussion, that the level of acceptance within Indian context, that if I'm literate, I know the wallet, the digital wallet, the usage of it. But if I'm a former, I know that, okay, this is just a paper to me. But to make the usage of that to the downtrodden people is a challenge for the other context in India. So all this framework, whatever we have, is very much acceptable and maybe applied very easily for the people like who have the digitized context in mind, or who have those the 10th standard pass out, or having the university verifier information. So they can verify, okay, this is Shantanu or this is somebody else. But what Nitin was mentioning, that if a farmer is traveling from an urban area to the rural, that information needs to get also be conveyed. Whether it is centralized or something. So that information should be kept in such a way that the usage and the advantage of the same information from the agricultural perspective should be perfectly implemented. So, am I?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this has been always been brought up in the Indian, the Indian context and so on and so forth. I think the main point is that for these kind of uses, biometrics is often used because people are illiterate or do not have papers or whatever the reason is. And that was seen during the identity ID 2020. Many of the solutions relied on biometrics. But some of the problems are the friction with the edge devices, right? Like for Aadhaar, that is the whatever the terminal that's used to verify your biometrics, but it's also the people who are in charge of them. Their attitude is very dismissive of poor people, and those kind of experiences do not help this stuff. Of course, I'm also interested. I don't want this to become just about Aadhaar, but it is to prove the larger point about SSI and the possibility even in the United States. Forget about India. Where is SSI being practiced at scale? The answer is, BC Gov is one. So I would be glad to hear about other use cases, and then we can quote them in our document. The other thing is, I want to hear what Marvin, for example, has to say about what's going on in Germany, because that is supposed to be the bellwether. GDPR is meant to be the bellwether. And how is SSI doing in Europe? Is I would like to hear from Marvin Bestecker. If he
I can try. I'm really new to this topic. I just started in the company, but we are trying to get a lot of people from different countries and from key countries maybe together to work together and to get standards. And I think a lot of companies they really want to do this and they join this work. So I think there's a great potential, but I can't say really more about it, I think.
Yeah, that is a key word, potential. Potential, but not realized yet. And I'm sure that when we put these systems into production, we are going to come up with a lot of emergent effects that we didn't bargain for. These are the things that keep me sort of awake, you know. So Digital Bazaar has done something. Oh, that's cool. The GS1, is that Kalia who's posted that? I guess so.
Yeah, and some of this stuff is specifically the stuff about the NAFTA and CAFTA reports actually were written over a year ago and only just now got released. So there's significant, like I was saying, behind the scenes implementations that are just now little bits of information about them are coming out.
Okay. So I wanted to also talk about, you know, this is good because we'll inject a lot of this into the document. I will try to do that with Kelly's help, and you guys can correct or amend the things that are there based on whether we got it right or not. Right?
So, I mean, it would be great to talk about, I think, if I'm reading the call right, I think we have agreement that centralized, that like SSI and these emerging, you know, system, these emerging standards that are quote unquote decentralized, meaning not that there are no central authorities ever, to authoritative sources of anything, it's that those authoritative sources now have a language to use to issue credentials to anyone, and then they can create interoperability that way, is that there's a contrast between that emerging work, much of which is coming out of Hyperledger projects, specifically Aries, Ursa, and Indy, but also things outside of that in the W3C, which is where Digital Bazaar is more oriented. And there's a contrast between that emerging stuff and centralized implementations or centralized identity systems or large IDPs, however we want to frame it, that Aadhaar, what Singapore has, and what Google and Facebook have ended up being. And that may be an effective way to sort of talk about what is and to look to the future in a way that doesn't get judgmental picking on India way, which I don't think is helpful.
Oh yeah, of course not. I definitely think, you know, we are interested in change. Change for the better. And what is better? Probably something like SSI. And how do we get there from here? These are the topics.
Does the paper need to answer the how do we get there question, or does it just need to say we see these emerging things happening and they have a lot of potential? Like what is the thesis of the paper?
Well, I mean, since we are supposedly giving some kind of a framing of what is happening in Hyperledger, we can say, yes, we see a lot of potential in these things. But at the same time, we have to say something about the efforts that are being taken in order to get there from here, right? Because we're talking about permission. Most of the things in hyperledger permission blockchains, they are still using LDAP. Fabric CA is still using LDAP. They're writing hundreds of POCs with this stuff. So, you know, how are you going to say to them, look, you guys are here, but if you want to get somewhere else.
It feels like its own paper, the path from LDAP to SSI.
Yeah. But, you know, what I'm saying is just a brief, at least a brief sort of section on it. It does not have to be exhaustive. It is not a book like the one you're publishing, right? It's just, you know, we just have to agree on, you know, some of the stuff, and then we push out this paper. But what is a paper? A paper is a point in time, and we keep moving. So how do we then address, you know, is it different versions of the paper or different angles, like you said just now, the, you know, how do we get to SSI from LDAP? I mean, that might be another paper, like you said, but so the paper is not the paper. In other words, paper will happen and then we go from that. Anything else? I had a thing from Elizabeth that I wanted to share with you guys. Can you still see my screen, or is it all muddied up?
Yes, we still can see it.
Okay, so here's Elizabeth's Elizabeth Renier is used to work for Sovereign or for India. I don't know which one. Okay, so her thesis is very simple, right? Her thesis is, I can't read this paper because I think it is it's locked down. And I'm not a member of Medium, but her thesis is very simple. It's, we are focusing on the wrong thing, data. We should be instead turning the thing around and saying privacy. How do we get from, so talking about data somehow distances us from the real problem. And privacy is something that we're trying to solve. And privacy is important. And how do we implement that? Okay.
Just whip in a quick addition, quick comment. So In India, there we recently had a consent framework implementation by the name of Account Aggregator, which actually stores consent for sharing of data. So that is a big part in data privacy. So just wanted to mention that.
Yeah,
have a centralized consent.
In fact, Ajay presented on this topic in this forum, but I don't think I gave him enough time. So maybe we are due for an update on that particular subject. We had people from Indie Semantics Group present on ARIES related consent. So consent is a big thing, right? Because
yes,
what happens?
So
go ahead.
So there is a centralized entity under RBI, Reserve Bank of India, Federal Bank, which is known as Sahamati, which is kind of a support group, and they have given license to 8 consent collectors, or we call it account aggregators here, and they have identified financial information as one of the groups to have this consent as a mandatory thing. So for all the financial banks or financial institutions, if they want to take a data from any user, they have to go through this consent mechanism. They have to get a signed consent, and then they can actually get the data and store it.
Great.
Yeah, I think there is an expiry date also, right, with that particular consent.
Yes. There is a frequency, there is a number of times, how you can access the data, what is the purpose. It's a detailed thing. If you like, I can present, I can do a small presentation on that, how it works.
Yes, I think, for example, Ajay got only like 10 minutes or so, and it felt a little rushed, and I'm sure that things have happened later, and I know that also the mobile Authority of India has also asked for a solution for consent for getting messages, right?
Messages, yes. So they already, all the telecom service providers, they have implemented Apple Ledger based blockchain to store consent, but that's more of domain specific for telecom, and that's the implementation they have already done. It's in production, and they use blockchain to store the consent from their subscribers. So all the telecom service providers. So that is a separate implementation already that has been done.
But it's not related to the consent architecture proposed by as part of Aadhaar.
Yes. It is not related to that.
There seem to be similar ideas there too, though.
Yes, but it's more of a bespoke implementation. So very specific to the kind of content we are storing. But in case of account aggregator, they actually wanted to expand to any other information, and it's a very generic framework they want to develop. So they plan to actually include health data, every kind of data what end users have and would like to bring it in that their ambit. And it's a big framework they are planning. Similarly, on the lines of Aadhaar, it's the same team. And I'm leading that implementation for one of the account aggregators there.
Yeah, you're leading the implementation for the biggest telecom group in India.
So
you have problems of scale.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I anyway, so before we end, it's been a delightful call, and we'll come back with more updates on the paper, and I hope to attract more comments, more collaboration. And the last thing I will say is GitLab tried to introduce a telemetry project. Telemetry meaning, you know, where they will get the user's usage statistics and send it to somebody else. It was also based on consent, but because of the hue and cry, they had to withdraw it yesterday. So GitLab, which is meant to be a developer's, you know, resource, had to withdraw because people are becoming more and more conscious of this, and hopefully that is good for SSI. Thank you. So I'm gonna close the call, right? Unless anybody else has anything more to say.
Yep, thank you.